Herzlich willkommen zum Fintech-Podcast von Payment & Banking. In unserem wöchentlichen Podcast sprechen wir mit interessanten Köpfen aus der Branche über unsere Hauptthemen Fintech, Payment, Banking und Mobile.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zur 165. Ausgabe des Fintech-Podcasts von PaymentBanking.com. Heute wollen wir uns mal wieder dem Thema PSD2 widmen, wie schon so oft in der Vergangenheit und vermutlich noch viel öfters in der Zukunft. Und zwar wollen wir das heute in dem Kontext machen, PSD2 aus Sicht einer Bank. Und wir haben da eine Möglichkeit gefunden, wie wir das schön hier im Podcast besprechen können, nämlich unser aktueller Sponsor InnoPay hat zusammen mit der Deutschen Bank ein White Paper geschrieben rund um PSD2, wie PSD2 aus Sicht einer Bank genutzt werden kann und mehr genutzt werden kann als einfach nur Öffnung der Schnittstelle für Dritte, sondern wie PSD2 auch einer Bank helfen kann in ihrer Produktstrategie und da im Kontext Payment, wie wir dann auch gleich erfahren werden. Und der Grund für die Diskussion ist eben, wie gesagt, ein White Paper, was InnoPay entwickelt hat bei der Deutschen Bank, was erst in der Zukunft erscheinen wird, also noch nicht da ist. Wir kriegen einen kleinen Sneak Preview darüber. Und haben insofern die beiden, die das White Paper entwickelt haben, nämlich Munem Kortet von InnoPay und Christian Schäfer von der Deutschen Bank als Gast. Aufgrund der Tatsache, dass Munem Kortet kein Deutsch kann, haben wir das Ganze auf Englisch aufgezeichnet. Passt sowieso bei uns im Moment sehr gut in die Strategie, weil wir haben auch schon angekündigt, jetzt im Rahmen des Relaunches des Blogs auch ein bisschen mehr international zu publizieren, Artikel auch in englischer Sprache zu veröffentlichen. Und insofern, wenn wir das vermutlich auch zukünftig häufiger im Podcast haben. So, I'm here in Frankfurt at the Taunus Tower, in Taunusanlage 1. First time that I'm here in this skyscraper. First time at InnoPay. Many thanks for the invite. InnoPay, as the listeners know and the followers know, is currently one of the sponsors of the blog and the podcast. So many thanks that we actually now have you guys in the podcast. We actually want to discuss about a common paper that has been made between InnoPay and Deutsche Bank and about PSD2, and this is why I have actually two guests with me, one from InnoPay and one from Deutsche Bank. Why don't you introduce yourself first, starting with Deutsche Bank?
Yeah, thank you very much. Pleasure being here and pleasure being on the blog. My name is Christian Schäfer. I'm a global product head for payments at Deutsche Bank in the corporate cash management space. And in addition to that, I run the group-wide PSD2 implementation project, which on the one hand side looks to PSD2 compliance, as we had it accomplished already at the beginning of the year with the core provision, but more importantly into the opportunity space of PSD2, where with the opening up of payment infrastructures to third-party providers, to fintechs, a whole lot of opportunities emerge that can be realized both by fintechs as well as banks, and Deutsche Bank is obviously very interested in realizing these opportunities.
Mm-hmm. And InnoPay? I'm Munim Kortet. I'm Senior Manager Strategy at InnoPay, where I focus on PSD2 and open banking. I'm also the lead for the PSD2 and open banking practice that we have within InnoPay, where we basically advise financial institutions across Europe mm-hmm. on their PSD2 compliance strategy, as Christian also highlighted, and their open banking strategy moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Niels, do you also want to say something from the local InnoPay?
From the local office, yeah, thanks Jochen. So actually, I'm Niels Jung, a managing partner of the InnoPay practice for the DACH region. So I'm happy that we are sponsoring you and also hosting Munim and Christian today for that study presentation. Otherwise, I will be more quiet today because I haven't been writing the studies, following, of course, what's happening there. But if we have something smart to say, Jochen, we will definitely feed in and ask some questions to the guys.
Yeah. Okay, perfect.
Looking forward.
So what was the driver for that common paper?
Maybe I just start. I mean, obviously, InnoPay is very well known in the market as expert, and the practice and the knowledge about PSDT is very deep on the InnoPay side. We worked previously, and for the specific paper that now looks into the second phase of PSD2, mm-hmm. where the focus is on opening up and realizing opportunities, we felt it very important for the market to provide not only a Deutsche Bank perspective of the industry, but also get an outside-in view from InnoPay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe just to add to that, based on our client experience, we just noticed that there is a lot of stuff happening in Europe when it comes to PSD2 and all kinds of collaboration initiatives that try to standardize various kinds of technical and operational matters. Mm. And we felt there is a need to clarify some of those developments, to provide banks with some further insights and guidance on how to respond to that kind of initiatives and how to guide further decision making internally mm-hmm. regarding their compliance approach to PSD2.
Mm-hmm. And is it already published or will it be published?
It will be published soon. We are in the finalization stage.
Okay.
So
this means we will not have the link to the paper in the show notes. We will publish or mention it at a later point in time in the blog.
It is most likely to happen in early August, so okay. It should come well in time.
Okay, good. So we need to remind ourselves to actually push it when it's live.
It's like a sneak preview, like when yes. you go to the movies, and if you don't like it, you can switch off now, but if you like to listen to it, you just wait until the end, and then you can read it in a couple of weeks.
Okay. Yeah, so talking about sneak preview, what is the sneak preview of the findings that you will mention in the PSD2 paper?
Maybe I just start. We have two major sections. In the mm-hmm. first section, we have a look to the impact for the different client groups. What does PSD2 mean for corporate customers? Mm-hmm. Where's the impact for fintechs, mm-hmm. for payment service providers? Where's the impact to retail customers, as well as the impact to financial institutions? Mm-hmm. And then in the second part, we more have a look to the overall market, where it stands. But maybe, Munim, you can give a quick heads up on the second part.
Yeah, so the second part basically further elaborates on the first part. In the first part, we touch upon the opportunities. And in the second part, we basically discuss the conditions that you need to put in place as an industry. So all market players that need to work together in order to seize those opportunities. Mm-hmm. And one of the most important preconditions that we highlight is the standardization of the interfaces, the so-called APIs that we are mm-hmm. all talking about, mm-hmm. That we highlight the importance of standardizing those APIs mm-hmm. to truly benefit from PSD2 mm-hmm. and as a next frontier, as we call it in the paper, to really benefit from the opportunities that open banking will provide.
Mm-hmm. And can you elaborate a little bit on those two segments? So what have you found out both on the corporate and fintech side when it comes to PSD2 opportunities, and of course on the technical APIs and the standardization on that? So maybe you start with the first part.
Yeah, I'm happy to start, and please feel free to compliment whenever appropriate. When looking to PSD2, it firstly comes to retail use cases. Yeah, mm-hmm. PSD2 is a reactive regulation to fintech behavior, where fintechs added based on banks' payment infrastructure, value-added services to retail customers, as well to online marketplaces. If you look to the sweet spot of opportunities, it's obviously that triangle where you have the online merchants on the one hand, the banks on the other, and the retail customers, and where with the access to the bank infrastructure, further value is created for the market participants. Hence, the sweet spot for corporates as a client group is primarily in the e-commerce space, they're the e-commerce payment space, mm-hmm. but there's also opportunities in the space of Internet of Things. So mm-hmm. if you look maybe 3 or 5 years into the future, where your car is not more, it's much more than mobility, where you have services in the car that you can switch on demand, where payment needs are required, that is something where PSD2 provides huge opportunities for having efficient solutions for making payments in Europe.
So this, may I interrupt very quickly, this means in the end, your view on PSD2 will, and when it comes to payment, will always be, in the end, it's a consumer payment. It's not a corporate payment. So large corporates will not leverage PSD2 for their B2B payments. It still is a consumer payment, but of course, corporates are involved in that consumer payment.
Thank you. That is a great question. And looking to PSD2, it was very much driven from the retail use case. And we, as a matter of fact, hosted a workshop in the fourth quarter last year with representatives from all industries to discuss PSD2 and the requirements to the Berlin Group standard, which we touch on a bit later. And from this workshop, the feedback from the corporate treasury side was rather explicit, in as much as they said they are unlikely to use fintechs to access their own corporate accounts, both with regards to payment initiation as well as in regards to account information. It was rather the opposite. They have been a bit more concerned about the fact that there might be their information exposed to third parties which are not endorsed by Group Treasury. So the initial feedback we get across the industry from our client group, very hesitant to use PSD2 as an access channel to their own accounts, very much interested in the opportunities to have better service to their clients, to have more efficient payment instruments in the B2C space. However, you know, like innovation, if new technology evolves, people start to learn about it, to look into it, and there might be corporate use cases, but certainly not in the first phase of PSD2. That would be the first client group that is impacted, but I think you can slice it further. Obviously, retail customers as of today, they are using PSD2-like services when they have account aggregation across different different banks, or when they use payment initiation service in the context of internet commerce. Here, the change is not too much visible at the client interface. It is more visible in as much as the European Commission has taken specific action in order to make those third-party providers, as they are called, subject to banking supervision. So from a retail customer point of view, the client experience and the product remains to exist. However, banking supervision takes on more responsibility in making sure that fintechs behave responsibility or provide responsibilities with regard to the services they offer to retail customers, and thereby take risks out of the market, which apparently exists even though not being exposed or realized towards retail customers. That's the second group. If you look into the area of financial institutions, it becomes very interesting, and maybe just some initial thoughts. Here, PSD2 is a significant change, significant IT projects to get it up and running, but more importantly, a strategic challenge to banks to question how do I want to respond to the significant change in the ecosystem. Providing just an API, as required by the Commission, is a very active step, but there is much more, and maybe Munem want to elaborate on that. And then lastly, you have the client group of fintechs that is kind of sitting in between, right? There are those fintechs that are already operating in the context of PSD2, and now become subject to banking supervision. They have to change some of their existing communication practices they have with banks. You know, there's this technology of screen scraping, where they behave like a robot on the bank's website, which now needs to move into API. So for them, it's going to be a real significant migration challenge that they are exposed to. But more importantly, they also have a significant strategic challenge in as much as they are now kind of entering an innovation ecosystem, which is much easier to enter because connecting via a standard API is much easier. So they can fear much more competition from other fintechs in the field, but also from banks, which may take a more proactive space step forwards in regards to PSD2. And lastly, with regards to payment service providers, PSD2 obviously is an opportunity in regards to offering new products, but also a threat to existing products that are on the payment cartridges. So different line groups, different views, but happy for Munim to complement on some of those.
Yeah, I think the interesting part where we touched upon is that you have B2B use cases where corporate clients will use PSD2 interfaces or APIs basically to realize internal efficiency gains or to improve payment processes internally or to retrieve account information in a more real-time manner than that they are used to today through host-to-host channels or SWIFT or eBix or that kind of protocols. But the interesting part that Christian also highlighted is more in the B2B2C use case. So where you have corporate clients that want to collect payments from their retail customers and that you enable that corporate with innovative payment solutions. And that is obviously the interesting use case where also PSD2 originated from, to basically further streamline and make e-commerce payments more secure and more convenient for customers, to provide an alternative to the credit card payments where that dominates certain European countries today.
Mm-hmm. When I look at when PSD2 was opened up, or actually defined from the EU Commission as a law, you mentioned rightfully it was banks more in a passive mode and a reactive mode, we always saw a lot of fintechs coming up with interesting ideas leveraging the data from PSD2. Now what I see is especially Deutsche Bank suddenly came up and did something that I had expected from a fintech, to actually be a party like Sofort Überweisung, building up a kind of a new payment mechanism, especially in cooperation with airlines. And I when I read it first, I thought it's interesting that suddenly a bank changes their position from a reactive situation in a proactive situation and comes up with a service to its corporate clients that we actually had all expected to come from a fintech and not from a bank. So how did that happen internally at Deutsche Bank, and how did you actually push that? Because as mentioned, I had expected that coming from a fintech and not from a bank.
Yeah, interesting that you mentioned it, because for us it was very much a logical step. Mm-hmm. You may recall that already 2 years ago in the retail space, via cooperation with a company called Figo, mm-hmm. Which is our co-sponsor of this blog, we have been able to make PSD2 like service experience available to our retail customers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, initially in the scope of account information service and consolidation, but already now with regards to payment initiation service. And by having this connectivity established, it is just a small step then building these existing infrastructures and services into collaboration with Figo to bring it one step further, to make it a payment method for corporate clients. Mm-hmm. And as I've mentioned earlier, this was very, very easy for us to accomplish given mm-hmm. the proactive work we had taken on the retail side. And as I've mentioned earlier, we had this workshop or a couple of workshops with our corporate clients. And interestingly, when we discussed with them B2B use cases where they have been a bit more hesitant in regards to how to apply PSD2, our corporate clients have been very clear in regards to the resulting service offering in the space that was called by Munim the B2B2C space. Mm-hmm. They've said, we love those services from this fintechs. Mm-hmm. And then they looked to us and said, we want to have the services from you, Deutsche Bank. Mm-hmm. And we kind of were wondering why we've been perceived as the natural partner for such services. And we questioned, why would you expect this from Deutsche Bank? And they said, for a couple of reasons. The first reason is we know your financial stability. Mm-hmm. For us, working with a fintech always involves a certain degree of operational risk. Mm-hmm. And with Deutsche Bank, we don't see this operational risk. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, they said, we come from all sectors and from all kind of industries. And we, as you, Deutsche Bank, we do have our vendor onboarding policies. Yeah, and for us, it's very much a hassle to get a fintech through a vendor onboarding policy, which is geared towards, let's say, the automotive industries, like sourcing tires, steers, and seats, and engine parts. And so for us, it's very easy to provide those services or get those services from a bank, which we already bank with. And that was then the point in time when we started our talks with IATA, who, as a matter of fact, has us as a lead bank in Europe. And they figured out that we have been very much advanced in our thinking on PSD2, given the thought leadership position we have taken all over the time and by the publications we did, etc. Mm.
That's funny, because I can only echo it from the fintech point of view. As TraxPay, we started as basically a fintech going to corporates directly, saying we can do it with other banks and we can do it much better. Mm-hmm. And we pivoted completely to a bank provider selling our platform to the banks, because we got the same feedback from the corporates. Only the combination of fintech technology or technology with the stability and the trust of the bank, that opens the doors. And you can knock as hard as you want. If you're on your own, it's basically impossible.
Yeah. Thank you for echoing that. And I'm a corporate banker. I come from global transaction banking. And for us, being a platform bank, is something we do almost for a decade. Mm. So many of the fintechs that do payments in Europe or across the globe already do this on our platform. Mm. So many of them say, we don't want to have the kind of full banking license challenges. We just want to be agile at the client interface. But when it comes to pure payments, domestic and cross-border payments, for us it's perfectly fine to have a bank doing all these services. So we are already used to be a platform bank, and so for us it was just a logical step forward in kind of combining the strengths we have on the retail side with the opportunities from PSD2.
But talking about PSD2 and the payment initiation, it's a technical thing. It's again kind of a rail, how you process the payment. But if you talk about retail payments, online retail payments, it's more than the pure payments processing. Just looking at basically Deutsche Bank's main customer, PayPal, where Deutsche Bank is initiating the domestic debit transactions. Yes, they do payment processing, but the true value is about the integration in the merchant side, the consumer protection with the insurance, the merchant protection, and the payment guarantees, etc., etc. How does that interact with PSD2? Is that a different segment that links, or a different platform that links and is then combining the offer, or will that be offered by third parties? How do you see that?
I can take that one. The IATA case nicely illustrates that as well, I think. The IATA case is a B2B2C use case. That is what we established. Paying for your flight ticket is usually done using a credit card, right? Because of the high amount, and you want to have the safeguards that a credit card payment provides you with. Like this guarantee that you talk about, or the right of a chargeback, etc., etc. If you look at a payment initiation service, it is a push payment. The underlying instrument will typically be a credit transfer. And there are various discussions in the industry about what type of credit transfer. Is it scheduled? Is it recurring? Is it SEPA? Is it a true international payment, etc., etc.? But in essence, the underlying instrument is a push payment. And that push payment doesn't have inherently the guarantees or the chargeback, right, that we know from credit card payments. And that is where the difference is. And we think, from an InnoPay perspective at least, that there will be fintechs indeed that will enrich this push payment from the account with these added features that we know from credit cards to make it also more a consumer product. Because payment initiation in its essence, it has more benefits for the merchant or the corporate that is accepting the payments, rather than from a payer perspective, the one that is paying for a good or a service in an online context. So that is a niche space, maybe, where we will see fintechs developing new value propositions to make payment initiation services also attractive for retail clients.
And is that something that, talking about generally open banking and not just specifically PSD2, is that something where you will have where you believe that there is a second interface, a second API, where you actually can connect additional services that are not core payment services to enrich those offers?
That is possible. That depends on the underlying API design, for example. But we will see different flavors there. Hopefully there is alignment on the European level to enable these services at scale in a standardized and harmonized way. But I'm afraid that many banks will see this as the competitive space and start thinking about their interfaces more in an individual way rather than from a industry or collaborative point of view.
Okay.
Initially.
Okay. When I saw PSD2 coming first time, I actually had expected similar initiatives like you with Deutsche Bank doing and the airline industry, that suddenly we see dozens of copies of the online banking-based payments like Sofort, driven by large platforms. So the airline industry, the PayPals, the Amazons, the Facebooks of this world. And I firmly believe what we see with Deutsche is just the first tip of a big iceberg that we will see coming with that. Do you share as consultant? Do you share that, or do you believe no? It's actually just a business that has space for two or three players that will be big, and we won't see a lot of initiatives coming up.
Our view is that you will see an initial stage with many players coming up, all kinds of fintechs that will try to establish a market position. With a very fragmented market as a consequence, maybe even confused consumers that will see all kinds of payment options popping up. But after that initial stage, you will see that only the strongest will survive. Mm. And the strongest will be the ones that are able to obtain the trust of retail customers. Mm. To obtain that position at retail customers, that they are a trustworthy player that can execute their payments in a safer, secure environment. Mm. And that will probably be the players that you just mentioned, rather than a fintech that, well, just started its business and tries to do payment initiation.
Yeah, so companies like the airlines who have a lot of customers, active customers, and who might try to become more independent from the existing payment.
Exactly. And of course, the payment solution needs to work in a seamless and convenient way.
Yeah.
But the basis, the foundation of that payment solution will be the trust that the customer has in the solution.
Okay.
And actually wants to use it.
Okay. Good. You mentioned at the beginning the second part, which is the technical part. Can you elaborate a little bit on that, please?
Yeah. So the technical part is a little bit later in the article.
Yeah.
We start basically with the second part with a couple of market scenarios that we might expect. And the scenarios are divided on two axes. The first axis is the extent to which banks will open up further than PSD2 and move towards open banking services. And the other axis has to do with the extent to which we will see a harmonized or a fragmented landscape. Will the banks develop their interfaces on their own in a proprietary way, following their own operational rules and technical requirements? Or will we see more collaboration on API design and security principles, etc.? And then we elaborate that if we look at the current state of the market, we basically see a situation where we, especially the majority of the banks, tend to focus on a very limited scope, only the compliance scope, and that we see that banks try to follow their own approach. We call that local flavors rule. That is what we see now. But we also see in the market various initiatives that try to drive harmonization and standardization of the technical and functional interface, the API. And we define that as a necessary precondition to move to a second scenario that we have defined in the article, which is a minimal viable ecosystem. That is where banks open up their PSD2 APIs in a standardized way. And if you do that, you will be able to offer third-party services at scale in a cost-effective way. Because these third parties will be able to connect to banks in the same way. We will have, I don't know, 5,000 banks in Europe. It would be complete chaos if each bank decides to design its own interface. And you should know as a fintech, that is rather painful. So if we can at least establish a handful of APIs, it doesn't need to be one API, because that is maybe too far-fetched. But at least if we have a couple of APIs, we think you create a minimal viable ecosystem for payment initiation and account information services to happen at scale. And as a next stage, we foresee that banks that really want to move beyond PSD2 and really seize the opportunities of this open payments and open banking market, we think it's relevant if banks also try to collaborate on the fundamentals of the APIs that move beyond that initial compliance scope. And then you move towards an open banking ecosystem. And in the remainder of the article, we then explain the preconditions for all those scenarios. But we focus mainly on how we can move from scenario one, where we have a local flavors rule environment, to this minimal viable ecosystem, where we have PSD2 APIs that are standardized. And there we explain all the initiatives that we see happening now in Europe, starting with the Euro Retail Payments Board, that has established a working group on payment initiation services initially, and they have taken account information services in scope where relevant. And they focus on the more operational and governance aspects, and soon after have created a distinct working group that will focus more on the APIs. And that is now the API evaluation group, which is thinking about the recommended functionalities that these API initiatives need to support. And Christian already mentioned the Berlin group, but next to Berlin group, we also see an initiative in France instead. We see initiatives in Poland and Slovakia as well, and also in the Czech Republic, and of course the UK that was already a couple of steps ahead. And there you now see already initial convergence talks between those standards mm-hmm. in order to really move to a standardized landscape that will make it easy for third parties to connect to the banks. Mm-hmm. And that convergence is mainly happening between STET and Berlin Group, and the representatives working on the Polish API are also involved in the initial talks now. Mm-hmm. So there you already see a clear sign, at least, or willingness to collaborate on the API standards. Mm-hmm. Well, and after addressing all those initiatives, we move forward to, okay, a technical interface. It's a first step to establish that standardization. But we all know from the payments industry that we need to make more agreements if we want to really make this work in a practical manner and mm-hmm. at scale. Mm-hmm. And there you touch upon more operational matters like registries or directory services or a harmonized testing framework because it would be very complex if each TPP needs to adhere to the testing requirements of each individual bank. Mm. So let's try to harmonize that as well. Mm. Everything to make it as seamless and smooth as possible for TPPs to connect to the interfaces of banks. And that is basically what we elaborate in the second part of the article.
Okay. What is the time frame that you expect that the harmonization, the real harmonization in the practical manner actually will take place? Because if I listen to my fintech peers, I feel to some extent a strong frustration because we had, especially look in Germany, we had the standard home banking interface that has been used for a lot of use cases that are already live. Yeah. And now that there is, I don't want to say it's a mess, but there is this complexity of different APIs and different approaches. Some banks are more proactive, like Deutsche Bank. Some banks are more trying to avoid it as soon as possible, or as long as possible. So how do you see when this will actually be harmonized to say, okay, here is now a kind of a standard minimum viable product API that can serve the vast majority of the banking market?
Yeah, I can go first, Christian, and then maybe you can add to it. From a bank perspective, and what we experience from our projects that we do with banks, is that there are two clear deadlines that they need to adhere to. We have the September 2019 deadline, mm-hmm. when the RTS basically kicks in and mm-hmm. applies, mm-hmm. and we have the March 2019 deadline, mm-hmm. where banks need to start the testing period mm-hmm. if they want to obtain this exemption for a fallback solution. Mm-hmm. And we see all kinds of API initiatives that are now trying to adhere to all the new requirements that the EBA has put forward in their opinion paper. Mm-hmm. I think that we will see API specifications that are standardized mm-hmm. Somewhere in the third quarter of this year, 2018. Mm-hmm. So September, October. Mm-hmm. Then we have the specification, and then it's up to the banks to make a strategic decision whether they will follow that standard, yes or no. Mm-hmm. And actually start the implementation mm-hmm. of that standard into mm-hmm. their system and make their systems accessible for these third parties. Mm-hmm. So my hope is to see a first standardization that you are looking for around March 2019. Mm-hmm. But my expectation is, considering the complexity of the backends of the different banks, that it will run towards September 2019.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And maybe for some banks that are, well, really lagging behind, even after that deadline.
That
is my view.
Yeah, maybe building on that, and I think we are aligned on this point as we are on most other points as well. If you look to the initiatives for standardizations, you have STAT, which is a very French thing. Yeah, you have this mentioned by Moonen, which are very kind of domestic things, and you have Berlin Group, which has support from, I can think, 20 different communities. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Berlin Group is in the process to execute an implementation project where those banks that basically want to implement a PSD2 on a standard API are sitting together, where the people sitting really together and making decisions how they want to build up their interface, so that it's really a kind of unique plug that all the fintechs and third-party providers can actually use. Mm-hmm. So in that respect, we are rather optimistic that in the first phase by the third by March next year, those banks that implement Berlin Group would be aligned. Yeah. So, and Munim, you are perfectly right. There is a lot of complexity in regards to bank payment processing as well as to data structures, etc. However, and that needs to be reflected in the APIs. But if you really take a close look to what is required from a market point of view, I think it's going to be a credit transfer. Mm-hmm. Either an instant payment or a normal domestic credit transfer. Mm-hmm. For that specific purpose, Berlin Group had come up with a very clear data standard, yeah, that was agreeable by all the member states that are part of the working group. And so in this core service, I think it's going to be easy to agree on a standard interface that can be used across Europe, mm-hmm. yeah, and will be available across Europe. And if you talk across Europe, I think he can look to Europe in two parts, even though the Berlin Wall has come down quite a long time ago. In the western part of Europe, you have the UK thing, you have the French thing, and then you have Berlin Group that is covering the big economies. So mm-hmm. Germany is fully committed to Berlin Group, Italy, Spain, the Netherlands, more or less. Mm-hmm. So with that, you have the majority of Western Europe really going into Berlin Group or into STAT. Mm-hmm. Yeah? If you look to Eastern Europe, this market is dominated by Western European banks. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's basically 5 to 6 banks that make up the market. And all of these banks are also committed to Berlin Group. So in that respect, we believe there is already a lot of adoption on the financial institution side towards this standard. And hence, we are optimistic that it goes in that direction. On top of that, I've mentioned it earlier, implementing a PSD2 compliant interface is a complex undertaking and very costly. Yeah. So our perception is that Tier 2 and Tier 3 banks that are also subject to PSD2, they are very well advised to go into these standards and apply the standards in their implementation just for cost and resource reasons. It's so complex to come up with specifications for APIs, and if you can just use the stuff that was jointly developed by the leading banks, which is now in the kind of open space and free for use, you just have this as your only opportunity to deliver PSD2 in time. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, if you speak with the policymakers in Brussels that have written PSD2 and their intentions behind it, as well as the national policymaker, they all want the thing to work. Mm-hmm. Right, and I'm sure that they have a clear expectation towards the banking industry, which is perceived by the banking industry, that we come up with something which is workable. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't want us to tell in 2 or 3 years again, you guys didn't get it again. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. And now we tell you how to do it, and we don't want to have dysregulation, mm-hmm. and hence we believe there are strong incentives go into standards and into standard APIs based on Berlin Group, except those couple of markets we mentioned before, and therefore we're rather optimistic that the thing is going to work out in 2019 as expected.
Yeah. And maybe just to add to that, if you focus on the Tier 2 and Tier 3 banks in the geographies that Christian mentioned, mm-hmm. There you see an interesting development where you see platforms emerging. Mm-hmm. Technical platform providers, like in Luxembourg with LuxHub, mm-hmm. that try to basically connect a whole community of banks through a single interface. Mm-hmm. And that interface is typically Berlin Group. So that is all already where you see the smaller banks that are enabled through a technical service provider to expose one single interface to make mm-hmm. it again easy for third parties that want to connect to the banks in that mm-hmm. local country.
Mm-hmm. Can totally echo that. Same thing happens in Portugal and other communities. Interesting here is that you not can only socialize the development costs for the API by industry solution, but you can also socialize, i.e. share the costs for operating the thing. Exactly. You need to have a test environment. If you share the costs with multiple banks, a perfect thing. You need to support, you need to document the thing, you need to help fintechs to onboard. All of that is stuff, if you are a smaller bank, you better socialize. And even in our case, we have a strong pushed towards a standard and continue doing so, not only because of the benefits just mentioned, but we are also highly interested in socializing some of the costs. We don't want to operate our own testing facilities for fintechs to connect to a standard API as required by PSD2. Mm. We want this to be a standard plug, yeah, that is available to everybody and that thereby have shared testing facilities, etc. So I think that is also a strong benefit of collaboration in that space.
Yeah, and this is also what we highlight in the article. You see like compliance in a box or compliance as a service emerging as a business proposition.
Yeah.
That is then offered by fintechs that are just emerging, but also by the more established players. Like the ACHs or, or various others, back-end providers that are now stepping in to offer such services.
You mentioned the costly part, and I totally understand that. What about, and we've just talked about payment initiation and only briefly about account information. What about leveraging PSD2 and the infrastructure that is now being built up and the whole standardization effort that also is very costly from a headcount, travel, etc. Point of view? How to leverage that by actually monetizing the data that the banks have via the same interface? Is it what you guys now are envisioning or building just the core elements that are in the regulation, so actually initiating payments and providing some basic information from the account? Or is it more that you actually then try to charge with an additional fee to interested parties, be it fintechs, be it third parties, that actually want to know how old I am, what is the valid address, KYC information, etc., etc.?
I can take it first. If we look at our clients, there are two perspectives that you need to distinguish. Like the consuming API part, where the bank takes in information from other banks that are exposing their APIs, and there we see value propositions on different levels. A bank can like aggregate the raw data itself and just present the aggregated information through a nice fancy app. We see banks that build propositions on top of that. That are more related to the insights that are derived from that raw data, categorization, budgeting, that kind of stuff. And you see applications that are built on top of those insights. And there you see all kinds of switching services. If you if they see that you pay too much for your energy bill, they provide a switching service to more cost-effective providers, etc. And we see that basically as a very defensive play from the banks in order to retain customers. And that is also a no regret for most of the banks in order to establish their relevance and maintain it moving forward. The more interesting part, where we support our clients, is on the exposing API part. And there, indeed, a bank needs to expose three APIs now: payment initiation, account information, and this confirmation availability of funds, which we tend to forget, but it's really in scope. And there you see that banks are thinking about all kinds of other resources or assets that they have within their business lines, and to start thinking about, okay, how do I build an API portfolio that I can monetize with, typically with partners. They start with handpicking the partners to think about potentially interesting APIs, like the name or address verification that you mentioned, that they can monetize and basically create a new revenue stream for them. So there are two perspectives that we see at our clients.
I again can echo that very much. From our point of view, PSD2 is to be seen as a stimulus. Well, the Commission has made a point, given earlier, earlier debates in the industry, but there is a clear expectation towards the industry that we progress as an industry towards a couple of dimensions. So there's a clear expectation that this doesn't stop at online accounts and payments, so it will go further from our point of view. There's also a clear expectation in that. It will go into the dimension of providing value-added services. Here again, we would see a need for industry collaboration because from a receiving end, coming back to the B2B2C discussion, from a receiving end, you always want to have reach to an entire client base across different banks. So collaboration on age verification, but also, for example, where it comes to kind of pay later schemes, where you have a kind of financing linked to a payment instrument, is something which again requires industry collaboration. There is the opportunity for the retail banks here to provide in a kind of common context value-added services, which then get appreciated. You must not forget that specifically in the PSD2 context, there is no value appreciation for retail banks. They have just to provide the services. And there is no explicit appreciation from the fintech nor from the merchant, for example, that uses the service. And there is opportunity to develop in that direction. And then lastly, and I think that is also part of the paper, PSD2 is a lead regulation within Europe, but it's closely followed by regulators across the globe, and we see PSD2 being a stimulus not only for the European payment market, but also as an establishment of a regulatory trend, where we see countries like Hong Kong, like China, like Japan, and others kind of picking up on it and coming with similar regulations, and we expect more of that.
And maybe just to add to that, we are also keeping track of these open banking developments across Europe, where we track the developer portals of banks that have publicly made available their APIs. And there you see a strong focus in Europe on payment initiation and account information APIs, especially the banks that are leading the pack, basically, that already have exposed their specifications. But you see some banks that are also moving beyond that, that are thinking about, okay, can we also expose our information on non-payment accounts, right? Because PSD2 is only about online accessible payment accounts. So you see APIs emerging on the non-payment accounts, like mortgage accounts, investments, etc. But you also see an interesting development towards identity APIs, APIs that expose personal attributes of, for now, retail customers. But we can well imagine that that extends to the corporate space as well. And there is an interesting development related to that, is that you see associations, banking associations across Europe, that are also thinking about collaboration in the digital identity space, which makes complete sense considering the value that is at stake in that specific area.
If I look at from a corporate point of view, as a corporate client to the banks offer already today a lot of APIs for their corporate products. How likely is it that those multiple other APIs will be at one point in time merged into a kind of a super API that a bank will offer to its corporate clients? Is that something that will happen in 5 years, in 10 years, or never?
Well, I can talk from my project experience again. What we see at the bigger banks is that this is the first step where they start. They already have APIs internally. Maybe we don't refer to them as APIs, but they are really APIs. They maybe do not adhere to the state-of-the-art design principles of APIs like REST, etc. But they are APIs. So the first step is to think about those APIs, to make those internally available, and then maybe expose those APIs to selected partners, which can be the corporate customers, and then move forward from that point to build out their API portfolio. That is where we see our clients focusing in this initial stages of the API development.
You're perfectly right in saying that the fact that something is used for a while and can be seen as an API doesn't necessarily mean that people really see it as an API. When speaking with corporate treasurers, the typical feedback we get is if it's running, like Ebix or SwiftNet FileAct,
we
don't want to change it because corporate treasuries, they're typically thinly stuffed. And they don't change for the sake of the intellectual or technical beauty. There needs to be reasons. The question is, now that you have to expose your corporate accounts via an API, how you make this a meaningful development and what you bundle into that? Because there's a lot of framework to be established really goes into API technology, and we see an immediate need to plug in instant payments, but also with regards to notification messages that you want to build in a PSD2 or like API environments, that you have for each of the receipts a notification to the corporate. You want to include, in our case, GPI information, which is the global payment infrastructure project of Swift that provides a tracking service for high-value payments into your API, and you develop further services. And by doing so, you may come up in maybe 3 to 5 to 8 years' time to standardization in your API offering, yeah, but there needs to be purpose in the corporate moving away from existing stuff they have. And while we see a strong update and expect a strong update for instant payments, some of the payments a corporate does may most likely not change in the foreseeable future. Yeah, salaries will continue to be paid on a monthly basis. Vendor payments will follow typical payment runs. And shifting all this business into instant and thereby into API may take a bit longer, as the pressure and the value creation on the corporate side may not be as strong as it is on the retail side, where retail customers are much more flexible to try out new stuff and use it if it's meaningful for them.
I completely subscribe to that. And maybe a bold statement there is that we really believe that rather than banks focusing on their existing channels and trying to build out those channels with additional functionality related to payment initiation and account information, we truly believe that banks need to move to investing in APIs that can be consumed by that same channel or by any other provider that is interested in that API. And that is driven by a requirement in PSD2 that says that your customer interface needs to have the exact same functionality related to payment initiation and account information as your customer interface. The customer interface and the API need to have the same functionality regarding payment initiation and account information. So from a bank perspective, it makes complete sense to have an API-first strategy, that API is exposed, and they can decide to consume it themselves through their own channels, or that could be, it could be offered as a commercial proposition to selected third parties, or maybe as a public API if that makes strategic sense. So that is the ultimate development that we see from a banking perspective.
Okay, we are now 15 minutes in the show. So when we started the discussion, we said you guys said, "Oh, 1 hour! It's so long."
So and I didn't even talk, right? I was just listening here. I won't ask the stupid questions, but yeah, that was fast.
So did I forget to ask something, or did you guys want to make more points on the study and on your view? So because we still have 10 more minutes to go, and if not, we will stop it here.
There is only one message. In the article, we describe a complex environment, a complex landscape with various initiatives. The thing that I want to stress in this podcast is that we are, as an industry, really heading into the right direction. It may seem as chaos and complete fragmentation, but there are really, we are making good steps, I think, in the direction to converge on at least the APIs then. And hopefully we can extend that to convergence on the registry and the directory service, where we see collaboration with the initiative of Preta, for example, and the ETSI organization that is trying to standardize the PSD2 certificates, where we see also MasterCard stepping into the landscape with directory services. And hopefully we can extend that to maybe a testing framework, all aimed at making it simpler for third parties to connect to banks and to enable services at scale. That is the only thing that I want to stress, basically.
Maybe one thing to answer the question, who should read the paper and why? PSD2 is a significant change in the payment ecosystem in Europe. It impacts all client groups in different dimensions, and those clients, be it corporates, be it retail, fintechs, financial institutions, payment service provider, that want to get some guidance on how they could benefit from PSD2. They will, in the first part, find an easy entrance to see where the opportunity space for them specifically lies. And then those that want to go a bit deeper and understand where does the market currently stand, and is this the area of ferment where nobody knows what's going on, or is this something where I already can start to become active and make choices on providers that provide solutions or build out my own solutions? It gives the guidance and transparency about the multiple actors in the markets, where the markets stand. We believe it's the right point to take action, both to implement your own strategies if you want to realize opportunities, but also for choosing providers that provide solutions, as we, for example, do in the airline space, but are discussing with many other industries and many others of our clients.
Okay. So many thanks for all the insights. interested to see the white paper in the end. I think we will have kind of an article in Payment Banking once it's live, because usually we talk about something, we have it in the show notes, and the people can click on it. This is not the case now right here. We have now 60 minutes sneak preview, and we'll publish it also on the blog, or announce it on the blog. Once it's live.
Yeah, we can put a couple of other links below, like the Open Banking Monitor that just Monim mentioned in here, which kind of gives a little bit of an idea how we see the market and how players do act. And we can also link the old paper that we have done together with Deutsche. Yeah. It'll be ready soon. It's just in the marketing department now at Deutsche, so it looks a little bit nicer and will be out soon.
Okay, great. Looking forward to it. Many, many thanks for your time, and looking forward for the next steps.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Pleasure.
Thank you.